Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Welcome back, folks. The Saints season is now over. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer, joins us. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, we've made it. We've gotten here. 18 weeks over.
We are here. The Saints end up being what, 5-12, excuse me, losing to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 10-7. They go to the playoffs. I have to say, though, I watched the entire game. I was proud of their effort. I really was. I thought they were throwing bodies around. You know, maybe the stats, and there were some great stats in the game for them. But the quarterback for the Buccaneers just played an incredible game. He seemed to be, you know, every break went his way for the most part.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield's playing really well. You know, the frustration with the Saints defense, and it's been this way for a while, you know, especially against Baker, it seems, whenever he wants to scramble, he can scramble. He can go wherever he wants. It's never a situation where that's ever a problem for him. But, no, I mean, they played really well in the first half of that game. It's kind of been the story of the season. You've been able to put really strong halves together. You've not been able to put really strong, complete games together. It's back-to-back weeks that Spencer Rattler, I thought, played really well in the first half. He played really well in the first half against the Raiders. He played really well in the first half against the Bucks. You just weren't able to sustain that, really. And, you know, the Bucks played kind of like a more desperate team in the second half of that game, and they were. I mean, they're playing for a playoff berth. The Saints are kind of playing for pride. But, man, they put a scare into them. There's no doubt about that. The fans in that stadium were getting restless. They were booing multiple times in the first half. You know, they went off the field down 10 at halftime thinking, man, we're going to blow this. But, you know, the Saints just have too many holes at this point. But it also, you know, it's a situation where the Saints couldn't hurt their draft pick by winning. But by losing, they actually did end up moving up a spot in the draft. So, you know, probably best case scenario, you put some good stuff on tape, but you didn't hurt your draft stock. So now we're just going to be sitting here talking about head coaches, scouting, draft picks, all that good stuff.
Well, before we talk about that, I want to thank you for joining me week in, week out. I really enjoy your commentary. I really enjoy the way that you break down a game. And I really enjoy, you know, what the role that you play with our overall team, with the Deuce and Mike Haas, and covering the sideline and all of our digital content that's out there. And just want to say congratulations to you on a job well done for this year. You know, it's a lot easier, I guess, to do a lot of this. And I think you would agree, when things are going really good, right? You're winning and everything is hunky-dory. And, you know, it's kind of a celebration week in, week out. We hadn't had that in a little while. So hopefully we don't get used to what we're having this year.
It's definitely a lot more fun, right? The conversations are more fun. You get, you know, and honestly for me, it's like I just get better. The content is better. People are more willing to talk. You know, the locker room is more engaging. When things are going badly, it's really kind of dreary and dull, and all the questions end up being, well, why aren't things better? And that's not fun for anybody. But I mean, I'm never going to be you know, I have a dream job, right? Like, I'm never going to be, you know, super negative about getting to stand on the sideline and watch an NFL game. So, you know, I think that might kind of come into my commentary a little bit, which is how mad can I actually be when I'm in such a fortunate situation? But I do appreciate what you're saying there. And it is interesting because you don't want to, you know, it's easy to look at a season like this and say, like, well, there's no way this can ever get better. I think, and what Darren Rizzi talked about yesterday, I think is accurate. Like, you know, if every time things go badly, you kind of tear everything out by the root and start from scratch, you're just going to be right back here in a few years. Teams do that all the time. You kind of have to look at the whole picture, take the positives, build on the positives, erase the negatives, and replace what needs to be replaced. And that doesn't happen if you start from scratch every year. And so that's kind of how I try to approach things. Like, okay, how can you actually improve things, not just be angry about the entire picture all the time?
Yeah, when you have mediocrity as a result of instability, right, in the way that you're managing a team and things like that, that's where you get into a point where it gets really difficult to change the culture. The Saints, for the most part, from a management perspective, I don't think that there's been that degree of instability. We may not agree with all the decisions that they've made, but I don't think that they're flying by the seat of their pants.
No, and I think that's a strength of this team. I know it frustrates people at times, but generally speaking, you look around the NFL, the teams with stability tend to be the more consistently successful teams. I mean, you look at the teams that replace the entire picture every year. You look at teams like the Panthers and the Giants and the Jets, and it's like those aren't, you know, that's kind of cathartic at times, right? Like, it's, fans are angry, they're upset, and they want everyone to get fired, and you fire everyone. They're like, great, yay, cheer. But then you look back 2 years later, and you're right back where you are. Like, those aren't the model franchises. I don't want to model my franchise after the Jaguars. I want to model my franchise after the Steelers, right? You know, those are the Ravens. Like, those are the teams that are successful, and those are the teams that aren't firing their entire staff and starting from scratch after every season that doesn't go well. So, you know, it is what it is. We'll see. This is an important offseason for this team in that sense, because you can say that up to a certain point, right? Like, you can say that until you go through two or three head coaching cycles and things don't improve, things don't get back to the baseline that you've set. And that's where you are right now. You know, you made the decision to try to continue the Sean Payton culture. It didn't really work. And now you're going to reset. So, you know, I think this is going to be an offseason that makes or breaks a lot of these, you know, long-term ideals that this franchise is based on.
It's how do I ask this question? So when we look at, like, today's player as opposed to 10 years ago, I guess for you, do you see marked differences? I mean, you know, the young men that are coming out of college today, kind of the way they view the world as opposed to how it was 10 years ago. I know when I was sheriff and managing millennials and Gen Xers, Gen Yers, you know, that it's not that they're, you know, lazy, this, that, or otherwise. They just kind of view the world differently. Your training has to change. The management style kind of has to change in order to extract the most that you can out of folks. Do you see that in football?
Well, I do have to be honest, at the risk of dating myself, I was not covering the NFL 10 years ago, so it's tough for me to make that comparison. But, you know, I do think that's when you look at the players that were here for 10 years ago, you look at a Cam Jordan, you look at a DeMario Davis, obviously not here, but he was in the NFL 10 years ago. Tyrann Mathieu has been around forever. I do think that is something you run into, where veteran players who have found a lot of success in the NFL will sometimes see some of the work ethic that comes in and that doesn't fly. And, you know, I think part of it is, hey, you know, you need those tone setters to kind of foster that image and foster that work ethic. And I think that's why, you know, a lot of people will complain, hey, the Saints defense is too old, the Saints are relying too much on veteran players. I think they see the value in that maturity and that experience because they wanted to bring along the younger players. Because I do think when you kind of, you know, it is kind of a weird culture that's coming out of college right now. And I don't know if every NFL team is capable of managing that the way that they might have been previously, where these guys are coming out of college, they're already affluent. They already have this massive brand that, you know, they're bringing to you. And then they have money. And then they have to settle into a team culture where they're at the bottom of the totem pole, and that's not always an easy thing to navigate. So, you know, I don't think it's going to get any easier. And we'll have to see. Like, you can talk about a guy like Shedeur Sanders, might be the number one pick in the draft. He's going to have a bigger following than a lot of the players that have been on this team, if he or whatever team he lands on, who have been in the NFL for years. And that's got to be strange, and we'll see how that goes. But it's tough for me to sit here and say, oh, 10 years ago it was like this, because I wasn't here 10 years ago.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see how that's going to happen. I mean, and I got to imagine it's going to be a consideration for whoever the next coach is going to be, right? I know there's been a lot of talk about why somebody would want to come here. If I were looking for employment, I would look for stability first. And I think that you kind of have that here in the management of this organization. And again, I know a lot of people don't agree with it, but if nothing else, it's stable.
Yeah, I mean, I think people a lot of times look at coaching searches and look at hirings and firings as just kind of like a button you press, a piece you move on a chessboard. When in reality, and, you know, Clint Kubiak talked about this the other day, it's like, you know, he's been in this situation before. He was the offensive coordinator for the Vikings on Mike Zimmer's staff. Year one, Mike Zimmer gets fired. He, you know, they clean house. He's got to go find a new job, ends up in Denver, ends up in San Francisco, ends up in New Orleans. You know, these guys have families. These aren't just moves they make flippantly. Like, they have to consider, okay, you know, well, am I going to live there? Is this going to be a long-term thing? You know, so that does matter. It does matter to a lot of these coaches. And that's why, you know, when coaches get hired, you don't see a lot of coaches get fired in years one or two. It's a much bigger decision than I think a lot of people realize. And when you do, you know, when you're the Panthers, and you have this track record of firing coaches flippantly, and your owner is so erratic, and you have to answer for that, it does make it difficult to hire a head coach. Dave Canales went there and got this insane buyout, which is basically the NFL equivalent of hazard pay, because no one wants that job. So, no, I mean, I think stability in the organization is important, and it's important when you're trying to sell your organization to your top candidate, because you don't want to be a team that ends up on your third, fourth, or fifth candidate. And we'll see how that goes for the Saints, because, you know, they're one of five teams right now who will be battling for whoever these top candidates are. We've already seen, you know, they've requested interviews with a handful of guys. So we'll see how that plays out.
I think a lot of the guys that they're interested in are in the playoffs. So I gotta imagine that's going to delay this process. I know they would probably love to have an accelerated timeline, but I'm not sure that's going to be reality. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you actually can't do in-person interviews with anyone who's under contract until January 20th. All you can do right now for people who, other than, say, like a Mike Vrabel, who's actually out of the NFL right now, all you can do right now are virtual interviews. Like, a guy like Aaron Glenn is in the playoffs. You could technically interview him this week because the Lions have a bye. So there are some weird kind of caveats. But no, I mean, I think it's the idea that you're going to rush through this and try to beat other people to the table. Any head coach with options is going to go through all of his options, right? No one's going to cut themselves off early just because another team got to them early. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to cast a wide net. The Saints are not going to rush this decision. It's way too important of a decision to rush through. And that's going to frustrate some people, because there are going to be coaches hired prior to the Saints hiring a coach. It's inevitable. It's just how they operate. They do not shortchange themselves on the process. Darren Rizzi is very much going to be a significant part of that conversation. He will be a legitimate candidate. You know, he admits that this team needs to make changes, but he doesn't see himself as an example of status quo. He sees himself as an example of someone who is capable of making the important changes up and down the line. So, no, it's going to be a long, protracted process. It's going to be a lot of opinions, a lot of conversations. But at the end of the day, the important thing is getting it right. The Saints have always been an organization that prioritizes getting it right over getting it done quickly, and that's what we're going to have again.
We have I was looking at something, and I don't totally understand it, but I was looking at a summary of salary cap space, And I know there's a lot that goes into this. And there was, I was looking, and the Saints happen to be, according to this chart, in dead last, at negative $66 million. And nobody else is even really close to that, quite frankly. I think the Cleveland Browns are second worst at negative $24 million. What does that mean, and how much of a limitation does that put on them going into this into the draft?
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack, right? Probably more than we can get into here, but you know, the interesting thing is that's actually the best situation they've been in for a while in terms of, you know, I think COVID was the worst, the COVID year, because the salary cap actually went down. So they ended up like $110 million over the salary cap, and that was very difficult for them to clear because they have these things planned out, right? They have their contracts kind of set up in cycles, so they know they always have enough restructure potential to get cap compliant, to clear however much space they need to make those moves. And the issue they're running into now is it's much easier to commit to that kind of long-term plan when you're winning games, when you're going to the postseason, when you're a consistently competitive franchise. It's a lot tougher to sell when you are 5-12, and you have to answer the question, does it make sense to pay your quarterback $40 million when you seem to be a lot further away from contention than that would indicate, right? And so, mm-hmm. you know, how do you get to cap compliance? Well, you restructure the big contracts on your ledger. One of those, for example, Derek Carr, right? So you need to clear $66 million. You can restructure Derek Carr's deal and clear $30 million of that, so you're halfway there already. But that ties you to Derek for more years, and you're pushing that cap hit down the line. And does that necessarily make sense under the current circumstances? Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, it was a lot easier to sell when you're talking about Drew Brees, and you're winning 12 games every year. If you don't do that, if you kind of eat that cap hit, then you have to restructure some other guys, a Tyrann Mathieu, a Cam Jordan, a Mario Davis. And that just commits you to some older players down the line. So, you know, it is limiting, but it's more limiting in the sense that I think this team is trying to commit to a rebuild of sorts. They're trying to get closer to cap compliance. So, you know, it's what people want, right? They want that rebuild. They want them to lean into it a little bit, but that leads to, you know, down seasons. That leads to not having the depth to survive injuries. It leads to, you know, some consistent poor play. And, you know, it's tough. I think what they should be doing is prioritizing draft picks and draft assets and making sure you're getting enough bites at the apple there. Because in order to get back to the cap situation that you need, you're going to have to get contributions from young players. You're going to have more drafts like 2006, 2017, or at least closer to that, so that you can survive eating more of these cap hits and not having to restructure every contract. I know that's a long explanation, but it is a very convoluted process the Saints have found themselves in.
I loved it. Thank you. I understand more about it now than I ever did. And although the Saints were 5-12, Jeff Nowak, you were 17-0, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us as always, and have a great week and happy new year.
Sounds good, Newell. You too. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll visit with Brandy Bynum, the acting unit chief of the Department of Homeland Security in the Center for Countering Human Trafficking. When we return, stay with us.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Welcome back, folks. Human trafficking is the tragic consequence of evil-minded people. And I think it's safe to say in every community around the world. And here to talk to us about it is Brandy Bynum, Acting Unit Chief of the Department of Homeland Security Center for Countering Human Trafficking. Brandy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
The numbers are staggering as it relates to the number of folks that are trafficked for a whole host of reasons. And sometimes I wonder if it's actually getting better or it's getting worse.
Yeah, that's a really great observation. Human trafficking has been around a long time. It is a $150 billion industry. But what we've seen is that, the awareness of the crime over the last several years has significantly increased. So I've been in this space since 2018, and most of my knowledge was from that Liam Neeson movie, Taken. And so that's what I thought it was. That's what the majority of the public thought it was. And so when I got immersed into this field, I'm like, this is nothing like that. And so our campaign at the Department of Homeland Security has been around since 2010. So it's been an initiative for the department as far as public awareness for that long. As far as the federal government, we've really been in the space since 2000, since the passing of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. So I really think that, like I mentioned, over the last several years, more people are becoming aware of what the crime is, which is why we're talking about it more.
So what is the significance of hashtag Wear Blue Day and the National Human Trafficking Awareness Day, which is January 11th? And just as an aside, Brandy, that's my birthday. So it's something.
Oh, well, happy early birthday. It's right
on the corner. I was aware of the blue campaign because of the alignment with my birthday and my role in law enforcement for a number of years. So tell our listening audience about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so as you mentioned, January 11th is National Human Trafficking Awareness Day. January is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. So in observance of that, the Blue Campaign, we organized hashtag Wear Blue Day. It's a digital initiative to raise awareness and inspire action. So we really encourage members of the public to wear blue, take photos of themselves, with their friends, family, and colleagues, and share them on their social media using the hashtag Wear Blue Day. We understand that some people don't feel comfortable sharing their face on social media, or maybe they don't even participate in social media. So we have a bunch of additional options on our webpage where we have, created some social media shareables where they can post those. And if they're not on social media, we encourage them to host an event or at the very least just talk to one other person about human trafficking and direct them to our website to get more information. But an awareness day like this is a perfect opportunity to educate the public, to encourage advocacy and promote initiatives to combat human trafficking.
We've been fortunate in this state. We've had a number of first ladies that have involved themselves in the awareness of human trafficking. And the more that I've heard the first ladies of the state of Louisiana talk about this, horrific stories. I mean, and I don't think people really realize the consequence of these actions.
Yeah, it's tough. Like I mentioned, I've been in this space since 2018, and the Blue Campaign, we have a network of survivor lived experience experts. I think we're up to like 75 individuals. So I have heard tons of stories from these amazing individuals. And like you said, it's a crime that's an exploitation against a person, which is very different than drug trafficking and gun trafficking and things like that. And so it hits home, right? And knowing that human trafficking can happen to anyone is, and it doesn't have any race or gender or ethnicity or nationality, that's why raising awareness is so important. So we really work hard to form these partnerships on the state and local level to help raise awareness. We were actually in New Orleans in August in prep for the Super Bowl, and you guys' governor's office was there. There was a ton of law enforcement and non-governmental organizations. So you guys are doing a lot of work, and I know New Orleans hosts a lot of large-scale events. So we're excited to partner with you in February to continue the awareness. But that's where it starts, right, is awareness and education.
These national events, in this case the Super Bowl, there's an attraction for human traffickers with this, right? There is a correlation.
So we don't like to say that we see more instances of human trafficking around large-scale events, because we know human trafficking is happening all over the U.S., whether it's a large-scale event or not. But what we do like to do and recognize is that anytime there's a lot of people in one place at one time, like the Super Bowl or an all-star game at the NFL or the NBA, it's a great time to raise awareness. And so That's why we partner with cities with events like the Super Bowl. Last year, we partnered with Las Vegas. We were there. Like I mentioned, we'll be in New Orleans again. Whenever you have a lot of people, especially something as big as the Super Bowl, it's always a great time to raise awareness. So we're excited to partner with the local organizations in New Orleans at the beginning of the month to host a resource fair. So we hope that people that are in and around the area will just stop by, you know, to just have an opportunity to get educated on what human trafficking really is, to hear from some lived experience experts, and to walk away feeling a little bit more educated than they did when they walked in.
And this is the exploitation of folks for labor needs as well as sex trafficking that's involved. And for decades, we've had a connection and a correlation to, you know, the exploitation of individuals by cartels and others along the southern border. Where do we stand relative to that?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned labor trafficking because I actually did a webinar for 2,200 financial industry professionals earlier this morning. And, you know, most people, when they think about human trafficking, they're only thinking about sex trafficking. So I'm so glad that you brought up labor trafficking, because in some parts of the world, and here in the United States, especially in our rural areas, labor trafficking is actually more prevalent in the United States. And so I think, you know, regardless if we're talking about the border or, you know, Central America or Northern, Northeast, Southeast, we have here at Homeland Security Investigations, we've had at least one case in all 50 states. And so that's why our program raises awareness nationally and now internationally, because we know that there's a nexus, you know, regardless of where you are.
And this is a really, they're difficult cases because it's kind of a subculture, right?
When you say subculture, what do you mean?
I mean, you know, they're in the fringes of society and communities, and you know, there's not a lot of folks that you know, you guys do and others, but really not enough advocates. Really not, you know, most of folks like yourself, myself, we don't travel in these circles. I mean, these folk, they're kind of, these actions are kind of migratory. They're always moving. You have players that grab, you know, whether it's for sex trafficking, 5, 6, 7 individuals, labor trafficking, it may be more and more recognizable and easier to uncover. But still, they're traveling in the bowels of society.
Yeah, that's a good point. And thank you for the clarification. Yeah, you know, we know that traffickers can be anybody of any gender, age, race. I know a lot of times we talk about male traffickers, but there's also women traffickers. And like you said, it's nothing like the movies. There's very rare instances where I've been watching a movie or a TV show. There are some where they get it right? It's people getting snatched up by the white van or kidnapped and put in the chains, where most victims are walking around like you and me. Right. There are certain indicators that we like to teach and educate on so people can become more aware of what to look for. But, you know, these traffickers are victims' boyfriends or girlfriends or romantic partners. They can be community leaders or people of prominence. Right. They can be employers when we talk about labor trafficking. There's also this element of trafficking that we rarely talk about called familial trafficking, where we have family members or close friends that are trafficking people within their family or their tight knit circles, or it could even be peer to peer. So you're right. Like, these traffickers are really savvy and they're integrating themselves into communities. And, you know, that's why education is so important. Right. Because if the trafficker doesn't look like who we think they look like, right, and then the victims aren't looking like how we think they look like, right, they have the freedom of movement, right, they may seem like they're happy and different things like that. And so, like I said, that's why education is important, so we can put everything into context to make people more aware and then how to properly report.
If folks want to reach out to you guys because they see something that, you know, their gut tells them may not be right and looks a little suspicious, where would they go?
Yes, properly reporting is number one. So the first things first, if somebody is in immediate danger, we want them to call 911 or local law enforcement. We have a robust training program here at the Center for Counter and Human Trafficking where we are partnering with state and local and tribal law enforcement organizations to educate them. And so our hope is that when somebody calls 911 and somebody is dispatched to the scene, then they know what they're looking for. The other thing is we have two tip lines that we encourage folks to call. The first one that I'm going to mention is the National Human Trafficking Hotline, and that number is 1-888-373-7888. And the really great thing about that number is it is available 24/7. They have really amazing hotline advocates that will take your tip. Or if you are a potential victim, because we know that sometimes traffickers have the radio on in the background, like this is a number that you can call to get resources. They have partnerships across the U.S. with non-governmental organizations and service providers to help these potential victims out. And it's anonymous. So we don't want you to fear calling this line in fear of retribution. You can call, you can make a tip, and help save a life. The other number that we have is our very own Homeland Security Investigations tip line, and that number is 1-866-347-2434. And we encourage people to use this line if they want to report directly to federal law enforcement. And that number is also open 24/7 every day of the year, and you can also submit a tip anonymously as well.
Final thoughts?
Yes, wear blue on January 11th. Post on social media, hashtag Wear Blue Day. You can even tag us at DHS Blue Campaign. And visit our website at dhs.gov/bluecampaign for more information on how to combat human trafficking.
Brandi Bynum, Acting Unit Chief, Department of Homeland Security, Center for Countering Human Trafficking. Thank you so much for joining us today. Best of luck on January 11th for bringing awareness to this horrific crime. We appreciate the efforts of you and your organization. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870. Give us a shout. We'll go to the talk lines with any comments that you may have. Stay with us. On a text line says, I don't know if you remember, but during the hooker heyday of the airline highway, local pimps would round up extra pot prostitutes whenever a big event came to town. JPSO, NOPD would place detectives and undercover assets at various motels. Definitely remember those days. And talking about those days, they obviously are still going on. Bogalusa Mayor Tyron Truong was arrested this morning by the Louisiana State Police as part of a multi-agency drug trafficking investigation. He's 25 years old. He's one of the youngest people ever elected as mayor. He went to Washington University in St. Louis and worked for a Democratic congressman before he came home to make a difference here. Well, the way he decided to make a difference was to involve himself in drug transactions, unauthorized use of a movable, soliciting for prostitutes. District Attorney Colin Sims, whose agency was involved in the investigation, said that Truong, while on a mayor's conference in Atlanta, organized entertainment with a prostitute at an Airbnb that he rented with public funds. And he also allegedly purchased drugs in Louisiana. And some of the proceeds of those drugs that he sold were actually used to purchase firearms. And these firearms were funneled to individuals who were actually prohibited from legal possession. And some were linked to crimes in the Bogalusa area. He was elected mayor since in November of 2022, took office in 2023. He was 23 years old at the time, youngest mayor in state history, and obviously that did not last long. Gloria Cates, the recently elected president of the Bogalusa City Council, will serve as mayor in the interim. It kind of highlights doing your homework, making sure that you're electing the right people for the right reasons at the right time. We see this over and over and over again. There were many questions about this individual, while he was running, his age and how young he was and this, that, and otherwise. And, you know, and here we are not long afterwards, you know, with an issue relative to his candidacy and his serving in the office of mayor there in Bogalusa. And now they're starting all over again. And we see this a lot. You know, you can't vote on sound bites. You got to do your homework on these individuals, what they bring to the table, what experience set do they have, and things of that nature. Because as we know, it can very much influence and impact the quality of your life. And all politics are local. And it's very much true. And I always say this, that what goes on in local politics is going to be more meaningful to your life than anything else. More so than state politics, more so than national politics. Because those are the folks that are going to impact your quality of life with the services that are delivered or, worse yet, not delivered. Right? And the frustration that you have in living in these areas where you're not getting the services that you should be receiving. And that's how you turn a community around. That's how you redefine a community. That's how you re-engineer a community, is right through the ballot box and making sure that everybody understands who's making themselves available for what reason and who's at work, going to work in the best interest of your city. All right, we're going to get to a break, and we'll visit with Scoot to see what he has coming your way. He's up next. Stay with us. Folks, do you listen to WWL on the Odyssey app? If not, you got to join the club. We've seen big growth in listeners in our area who actually stream their favorite shows on their phones and who download our podcast. Now more than ever, you want to stay connected to WWL for breaking news, sports, and opinions you just can't get anywhere else. Download the Odyssey app today and make sure to go to My Audio, then go into your settings and turn on notifications. That way, you'll never miss a big story or a red-hot interview right here on WWL. It's always live on the free Odyssey app. You can listen to Tommy, myself, Scoot, and the sports guys at any time you want to. And Scoot joins us now. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Hey, look, honestly, how long do you think President Biden was on the flight back before he fell asleep?
I bet the plane
didn't even take off yet. I bet they were going down the runway and he was already asleep.
I can't say anything because I'm kind of guilty of the same thing. If someone's driving me or I'm flying, I'm going to sleep.
Yeah. But if it's a busy day, you know, he kind of always looks asleep. And I thought, man, you're on that cush plane. And, you know, it was interesting that they used the 757 and not the 747. And I don't know if I'm right about this, but I think because of the strong north wind, they had to use the north-south runway, which is a shorter runway than the east-west runway, because the 747 has landed there at the airport before. So I think that maybe that's why they have to use the 757, which is the smaller plane.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a plane geek, and I know nobody else is interested. All right, look, should the ex-Proud Boy who was convicted for his role in January 6th, should he be pardoned? That's one of the things we'll talk about.
All right, Scoot's headed your way. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Tuesday evening. We'll see you tomorrow.